thanks for being here. So just take your time and share with us about CVO.
So first of all, I'd like to say thanks for having us here and for be part of us and or take us and be part of your church family. So we appreciate it. And also would like to thanks the whoever made the sandwich. It was good. I think we haven't had the best sandwich in a while, because when we were in Cambodia, we were eating rice and stir fry and noodles and dumplings for that guy. We were like, we need some sandwich. And she's like, we need some sandwich. I was like, well, tell me where we can get a good sandwich. I'll take you there. I'll drive, but you tell me where. And it was hard to get a good sandwich or a hamburger. There's a place, it's a Christian organization also. They started a coffee shop. They got good sandwiches and stuff like that, but it's also pricey. And they marketing tourists, basically. And so we are local. You know, we consider ourselves as local. So it's hard to spend a lot of money on it. But once in a while, we kind of compromise. It was like, I forget it. Let's just spend $5 on a sandwich, stuff like that. So just to survive there. But anyway, it was good. It was good. It was good. Good chips. Good chips. Good. I didn't realize how much chips I got. I was like, oh, there's a lot of chips. Grab some more chips, because it was good. So since we're back to was that a week now? I think I had two times of a Chick-fil-A. It was good. She was running some errands and talking to Craig on Messenger. It's like, oh, I'm on a car. I can text right now because I'm running errand. I was like, and I text back. He's in a group. I said, not me. I'm sitting here eating chicken sandwich. Who's jealous right here? She was sure. It was good chicken sandwich for sure. So yeah, it's been nice to be back. A kind of a break for us to be here. Not that we need break, but we also need break. But we need to take care of how while we're here. But before I'm going too far, we would like to share a little bit about Cambodia Village Outreach, CVO. When we first get married, you know, you hear her story and stuff like that. I'm come from a Buddhist family. My dad used to be a Buddhist monk for 5 years, and he knows inside and out of the Buddhist faith. And the belief in that they have. And so my mom became a Christian first, cuz she been looking for the thing with her is that she was trying to break free of worshiping spirit, worshiping idols, and and to try to get away from this bondage that its generation passed through, that you had to do a certain thing in order to be safe and to live in a better a life, I guess. But that's not what she was receiving from her belief, worshiping the spirit, worshiping the ancestor. You know, and worshiping the moon, the sun, the water, everything is just God. In Cambodia, I don't know about China, I have no idea, but the sun is God, the moon is God, the water is God. I mean, everything is God. And my dad believed in Buddha, but he also know that in his life, if he did not, they call it, the merit or something like that, he will not go to heaven. So one of the reason he going to the pagoda is is to try to do the right thing, learn all this the Bible, or things to do, good things to do in his life, and then all do all that, just try to go to heaven. And so when he read the Bible, he read the Bible the first time. Somebody gave him the Bible, and he would not read the Bible. My mom said, just read the Bible and see what's in the Bible. If you don't want to believe, it's fine. Just read the Bible. And so my dad, he used to be a monk. So the monk, they learn a lot. They read a lot. So my dad, sure, he took the Bible. He read the Old Testament. In the beginning, God created the earth and the heaven, and everything else was created by him, you know. And then he was like, his eyes were open, because when he was in a monk, he learned that the earth and everything else was created, but it doesn't say who created everything. It says that it created by the word, but whose word is that? It doesn't say. So when my dad read the Bible, he seen God created everything. And then he read John chapter 1, say the word became flesh. The word was God, the word was with God, something like that. So he read that, he's like, okay, so the word is Jesus, and Jesus was God, and God created everything, so Jesus was in the beginning. So he found the truth, and he found that, okay, there it is, God, he's been looking for that also, but he did not find in Buddhism. So he became a Christian, and you know, his eyes opened, his heart opened, and he received Christ. And he told me, no turning back. So if a Cambodian start to believe in Jesus, start to see the truth, they will not turn back. They will not go back to anything else. They only worship one God. So now my parents worship one God, and the God and Jesus only. And no more water God, no more moon God, and the sun God, and the tree God, and even a turtle is a God. I mean, like, everything is God. But now that we know that, now that they know that everything else was created by God only, they worship God only. And so that's my, and then when I'm growing up, just like everybody else, like a kid's growing up, right, in a Christian family, sort of, because my mom didn't get to know Christ since they were, until they were about 30 years old, 35 or so, something like that. And so I was about 9 or 10. I had no idea what Christ is and who God is. But I always remember that my mom told me, whenever you fear, whenever you're afraid, just pray to Jesus, and Jesus will be with you. Jesus is always going to be with you. I remember that until now. Every time I go into the wood, like kids here play where? Playground? Kids in Cambodia play in the wood. Well, I don't know about Texas. Maybe Texas play now. You know, I have no idea. But yeah, the thing is that we play in the wood, and like when we go swimming, we swim in a pond, but not really a pond, but like a hole in the ground, or like somebody dug the big hole for the dirt and left a bunch of water, and then we just go swimming. And so every time I would do something, I would remember, because it's like everything in Cambodia is a risk. I remember when I was walking to school in 1993 or 94, landmine is still everywhere in Cambodia. So I was walking, there's a sign say, walk on this road. Don't get off the road, because if you get off the road, you might get killed. Even though there's no mine there, but who knows? Nobody knows if there's not any at all. They were still clearing up mines, stuff like that. Here and there, you would hear, boom, the cows step on the mine and stuff like that. But yeah, I remember, I always pray, God, please be with me. You know, I was scared and stuff. Go in the wood, pray. Go anywhere, pray. I was scared of the lions, the tiger, whatever. But we're curious, right? We want to go play, but we're also afraid. So I always remember my mom told me to pray to Jesus. And I prayed to Jesus without knowing why and why not. And so when I was 15 years old, I became really, read the Bible, go to church by myself, learn about Jesus, and knowing that all this throughout my life, God has prepared me personally, prepared my parents so that, you know, her kids can be saved also. If God did not take my mom away from the village and to tell her in so that she would know about Jesus in the refugee camp, then I wouldn't be here, and then I wouldn't be saved, and I wouldn't be able to go back and tell my own people about Jesus. So, see, in Cambodia, if you're stuck in the village forever, and nobody go into the village and tell people about Jesus, they will not know about Jesus. But somehow, God kind of delivered my parents out of that village to go into this refugee camp where after the Khmer Rouge, if you heard about Pol Pot regime that killed about 3 million people. The refugee camp is still there, but people are stopped going in there. They block. They stop allowing people to go in there. So our family sneak into the refugee camp. And they caught us, but somehow God kind of planned it. And they took us in, they prepared a house for us, and everything was a miracle. Looking back, it's a miracle because they could put us in jail, they could hurt us, they could have done a lot of things, but instead, the people that take that patrol the border, it's like, come on in, and you know, get the house for us, get us in the food stamp program, and everything. So we were in refugee camp for 2 years. And then that's when my parents became Christian, and then we came back. So when I was 15 years old, I learned all this thing was prepared and was called according to God's purpose. And I always think that one day I would love to be able to tell other people about Jesus in my own country. I mean, I never imagined to be here. I never thought that I would marry a white girl, a beautiful white girl. When I first saw her, I thought that she was so cute. I never thought that I would marry her. And so, but she got all this.
That's for another day.
Was God planning for us to be together? So when I was meeting her, so. You know, life is busy, right? You go to school, you try to earn money. Now, life in Cambodia is very, very hard. Like, to be able to survive, you have to go to English school because English is the thing that everybody learn. Everybody will have the opportunity to get a good job. So that's a thing to do in my generation. So everybody go to school. So I would go to school in the morning at 7 o'clock. I never get up early. I always late for class because I am not a morning person. I always get up late and go to school, and then I would after school around 12 or so at lunchtime, and then I would do another hour of school, and then a college. I'm just talking about college right now. And then I would I would ride my bike to go to a two or three different hour classes of English. So I would take one class here, because they only give one class at a time, and I would go to another class to take their classes of English and try to improve my English. And English is not easy, but Khmer was hard to learn, absolutely. The writing is hard. But English is easy to learn, but it's not easy to learn. I don't know what to say, but it's not. It took me about 10 years to learn all this grammar, and I still speak incorrectly sometimes, and you probably think that I speak good English, but I know myself. Sometimes I speak. I tell a pastor that sometimes I might run out of words. So when you see I'm quiet, which means I'm running out of words. I don't know what to say anymore. And then the pastor will say, "He told me that, but he hadn't run out of words yet." I'm like, "I don't know. I'm just telling you so you know." So anyway, I would go to school and then go to college and then meet her, and then knowing her was just a simple, but I always think that I always want to tell people, my people, about Jesus. I always want to go back to the village. I always want to go go somewhere in the country to tell people about Jesus. Because knowing Jesus is like you finding a treasure. For my parents, it was like a treasure that they looking for their entire life. And so they hold on to that treasure forever. So I would love for people to know how to get the treasure also. So God always called me to go and tell people about Jesus. But I don't know how. I have no idea how. I'm just trying to survive. But and then we met, and then we become best friends, like you said. And then when we get married, we know that God still want us. Because I told her, I said, I still want to tell people about Jesus in Cambodia. And she said the same thing. I was like, okay, good. Now we can get married, right? If not, no. Just kidding. It might be. I don't know. I don't know what God wants to do. So, when we were in here in 2009, we were getting married in 2009, and then we tried to get a citizenship for me. So I'm a legal citizen. I've done all the process. I've done all the good things that the government asked me to do. I pay tax. I find job, and I drive. If the speed limit 35, I drive 35, right? If the speed limit 60, I drive 60. But once I become a citizen, I can drive a little faster. I'm serious. That's true. So I did drive a little faster because she was scared that if I got pulled over, I have a kind of, you know, felony record or record or whatever, you know, in my system. So we try to stay in the limit, you know, everything's like that. Huh? But anyway, so I would like to show a little bit of video. That the video will it's kind of show the start, like when we started and how, and a little bit of a glimpse of how we begin the CVO.
Just like a drum, I can hear the heartbeat, and I know my God.
great. I guess it's just going to be me now. So where to start? I feel like there's so much of a story to tell. It's hard to know where to start. So to make a long story short of how we got to where we are, we had started in one small village. There was, presentation. There's just going to be some slides that are going to go through, and I might stop and tell you a story or two. There's one story, this little girl that's going to come up here, and that's going to be up on the screen in a second. But we went into when we first moved to Cambodia, we were looking for a place to live, and there was one house that we had gone to look at, and the house was terrible. It had rats in it. We didn't know it had rats at the time, but it did have rats in it. And so we were looking for a village to do ministry in, and so we saw the area, saw the poverty that was around. We saw just how desperate it was there. And we decided to move into this rat-filled house, which I don't mean rats. I mean, I don't know what kind of rats you have here, but I mean rats. Not field mice, rats. And I thought we had just made the biggest mistake of our life when we had moved in that house. And we were contracted for a year. And so we moved in this house, and I'll never forget this little girl with this lice-filled curly hair getting kind of close to me. And it was like, let's see if we could touch the white person, right? Because, you know, I'm the only one in the whole area. She'd get close to me. She'd run away. And she has the cutest, raspiest voice. She still has this cute, raspy voice. And she get real close to me, and she's like, you know, she tried to touch me. I didn't touch you. She touched me. She ran away. And that was kind of the start of ministry, was little Gigi coming and coming in and trying to touch the foreigner. And so we began building relationships with these kids and their parents. And this was a really bad situation. The parents were always drunk. There was abuse going on. The kids were cursing because their parents were cursing. They were hungry. They were coming to our house all the time to eat because there was no food. There'd be knocks on the doors, I need medicine, I'm sick. And we had a woman that was brought to our front door who had passed out. We had no clue why she was passed out and going in. Just like really difficult, situations. But that was where we started. And we started just doing little children's programs. And Domson was building relationships with the moms. Because at this time, I could speak Khmer well, but I was having to relearn a language and then relearn it in a different dialect. I wasn't there yet. And he was, of course. And so he began building a relationship. And there was this grandma. Everybody's grandma, uncle, and aunt there. That's just what you call each other. We call her the grandma. And Domson had been sharing with her. And she finally just said, you know what? I'm sick of this Buddhism. I make these sacrifices. This is Gigi here, but she's only halfway. I'm not sure what happened to Gigi. But there's Gigi right there. There she is. See? Lice-filled, curly, tangled hair, just a mess. Tiniest little thing, about 4 years old there. And then this is Gigi just a few weeks ago on the right. And she still lives a very difficult life. Her dad is abusive still. Her mom is kind of not in the picture right now. I mean, it's just still a very difficult situation. But she is definitely a full believer. She is, she'll stand up for Christ. I mean, people might say things to her, and Gigi doesn't take it. She's very strong. But anyway, so we began talking with the grandma. And during that time, the grandma was like, I'm tired of this Buddhism. We have tried it. We've made sacrifices. And this never helps us. Nothing ever works. I'm done with it. I want to know about Jesus, and I want to change. And if you met that grandma today, when we tell her friends about her story, about what she was like before, they don't believe us. Because she's terrible. I mean, she was awful. She was a sinner, and she needed to be saved, and she was. And so she is actually someone who she's completely illiterate. She can't read or write at all, completely uneducated. Her husband passed away a long time ago, but yet she is the one who shares the gospel with people in her area. So we had started there in that village, and then we had the opportunity to go to a second village, which is Domson's parents' village. And he didn't really tell you this part of the story, but Bob Domson actually had another brother who passed away on that land, in this village, from a sickness before they went to the refugee camp. And that was where his mom really started seeking at the true God, because these Buddhist gods and spirits were obviously hurting them and not doing any good to help them. So she was done with that. Kind of the same as the grandma that I was talking about. And so that is the land that his brother passed away on. And now it's the land where we go and tell Bible stories and do medical clinics. And so what God has taken for, not sorry, what happened that was so bad, God has taken that and turned it into something that glorifies him. And so that was the second village that we were able to do outreach in. And then at the same time, there was another village. We call it the faraway village. It's really only like 45 miles, but it takes 2 hours to get there because the roads are so bad. And our contact there was the witch doctor and his wife. And so we were very open and said, you know, we're Christian. We're going to tell Bible stories. You know, can we do it? And they're like, sure, why not? And so there we were sitting under a big tree. The witch doctor's up there doing his little witch doctor thing. And we are sitting there singing Jesus, Jesus this, Jesus loves you, singing songs about, you know. So it was kind of funny to kind of see just the complete opposites, someone worshiping Satan here and then someone worshiping Jesus within, you know, 10 feet of each other. So God has used that, and we've been able to do a lot of outreach in that village where we have a center now, and we do a lot of medical outreach, and we've done water filters there also. And then from there, we had got an opportunity to partner with someone to start to help him in his village, and then also we've branched out into four other villages that are farther than the faraway village. So farther, farther, farthest, and then farthestest. I don't know. It's just far, really far. So in each of those, we are now, we've kind of changed our, I don't say mindset, but kind of changed our strategy and what we're doing. So instead of going and starting these big children's programs like what we've done in the past, we're focusing more on discipleship. And I'll let Domson tell the story of Get. Let her, because I know I can't tell it very well. But yeah, you can come. Go ahead. But I do want to quickly tell the story of a woman named Chinta. She I think she's officially the loudest person in Cambodia. There's no one that talks louder than her. I don't have a picture of her. But she likes to come and stand beside me and scream. And I'm getting, I know you probably got old. I feel like I'm getting older. And it like makes my body shake. I don't know. I just can't stand for someone to come scream in my ear. Like we have inside voices, right? No, she has no inside voice. It's outside voice everywhere she goes, and then magnified. And so I was like, man, she's gonna be the last person. So Domson's gonna tell a story about this family here in just a second. So just kind of put their picture in your mind. And so I was like, she's going to be the last person to accept Christ. I mean, this woman is awful. I can't stand her. I was like, how can I get away from her? Like, she follows me. And I'm like, and then she was right beside me again, screaming, you know. And so she came to every Bible study. I mean, if we are there, she is there. I mean, she was so distracting in our children's programs. Like, she laughed loud. I mean, everything. She was just so distracting. And it was like, what can we do to get her to stop being so distracting? Because it was very distracting. I mean, maybe the kids were used to her, but I definitely was not. And so, excuse me, she really attached herself to us. And she had heard the gospel, and she was definitely interested and open. And so she had an opportunity to go to Phnom Penh, which is the capital, to share, to go to a Christian conference where there would be a lot of Christians. So you have to understand, too, like, in this area, these people never leave the village hardly. And then if they do leave the village, they go for just a day or two, and they don't ever see any other Christians. So the only Christians they've ever seen are us and our team. I know you saw a picture earlier, but if you see our picture card, you'll see all eight of them and then the two of us. And so she got to go to this Christian conference, and there at the conference, they were talking about things that are just holding you back from fully giving your life to Christ. So in Buddhism, they wear these, and I've got a black rubber band, but they wear like a red string, and that red string is to protect you from spirits, or protect you from bad luck, I should say. And so they also wear them on their waist, or they wear like a Buddhist thing around their neck, kind of like a necklace with this red thing or whatever. So anyway, a Buddhist statue around their neck. So you might see some of that. Like if you go to a Chinese restaurant, you might see that. Or you see like some strings, stuff like that. What, buddy? Oh, he's looking for some more drink. One more and that's all. Okay, buddy? Yeah, we have to get on an airplane. Yeah, he's over there shivering because he's so cold right now, too. Yeah, we'll go ride an airplane. And so so she had gone to this conference, and she knew there was something that was holding her back, and she said, I still have this red string. Now, she has said that she has accepted Christ. So you have to understand, too, that to let the string fall off because it's worn off is okay. To cut the string is to say, basically, here I am, spirits, come get me. I mean, it's a huge, big deal to cut the string. And we really have encouraged people to, you know, we've seen Christians put these strings on their babies because they're scared. There's just so much fear. It's all about fear. If you can keep someone, anybody that's afraid of you is under your power. And that's what these spirits do. This Satan, he keeps them under their power by keeping them afraid of bad things happening to them. And so when she knew that this was what's holding her back, and so she said, give me some scissors, let's cut it. And so she said that when she cut it, every time I tell this story, I get chills. When she cut it, she said she knew she felt freedom and peace for the first time in her life. Because she fully, 100% committed her life. And immediately after that, not like at the conference, but when she left, she began being persecuted for her faith. People were talking about now this is a village that we have worked in for a couple of years at this point, and people were talking about her in the taxi that was driven by tractor. I don't know how to describe this stuff to you. They were saying, there's a crazy woman here, there's a crazy woman here. And she was really upset because they were talking about her, and really what she had was the Holy Spirit. And they had the evil, and you know, the evil spirits in them. So, I mean, it's just it's such a testimony to God really giving that peace and that freedom. And she's very much still attached to us. But she believes, she fully believes, and she's very open about it. Is she still the loudest person in Cambodia? Yes. Will she always be the loudest person? Probably. I don't know, maybe her children will outdo her. Some of those things are passed down. I don't know, but she's still like up there with the loudest people. But she does believe, and she's outspoken about her faith. She's not ashamed. So I'm gonna let Domson tell a story of Gek and her family.
So, she was talking about the red string or the string they wear on their waist and their wrist and their neck. Everybody wearing that. Kids just was born, just a baby, just a 1 month, started wearing that because it's like a protection from the spirit, from the evil spirit. But yet they still worship evil spirit, but they're afraid of evil spirit. So her kids, Jantai's kid was, they all took it off, and no, her kids has nothing on her except like jewelry and stuff like that, which is good because we can see how she want her kids to be freed also, not the same as other kids. And so Get's family, you see the water filter out there, that's a water filter. I think that's the water filter from Kids Across Culture. The bucket is not as nice as that one. That one's really nice. I like that one. Oh, yeah. No, is it not? Where is Craig? You know? Oh, okay. Well, never mind that. and so, yeah, that's the water filter. And the story of Kay is that now I found out about this letter while we were building a relationship with her and do discipleship with her. We found out that why she want to become a Christian, she want to believe in Jesus. She came to get the water filter because she heard from somebody else that heard from somebody else that heard from somebody else that came to the clinic. You know, during the medical clinic, we would announce, okay, we'll give out water filters this much and this day. If you want, you come and register your name so we know how many. And just this village also. She did not come from that village. She came from another village to come and get the water, and she did not tell me. And I asked, where are you from? She said, oh, I come from the other village. I said, why you come? Because I'm not giving this to another village yet. She said, well, I need water filter. I heard somebody say some. And so I said, okay. I kind of let it go. Like, a lot of people come like that. I don't know how to say no to them. And then I just sit there and, listen. So I told them, like, we will share the gospel and we'll do a training. If you don't do a training, I don't care if you don't want to listen to God, but I still want you to be to listen to the training, to use it properly. So she sit through the training, and before the training, we have children program. So she was watching us doing children program, telling kids about Jesus and about the story Bible. And you see, she's stand there watching we telling story Bible. She smiled. She laughed with us. She smiled. She's kind of enjoyed what's going on with while we're doing the children program. And so I'm just watching her smiling and everything, and just happy to be there. So during the training, we do all this sharing gospel. I tell them about Jesus, how good Jesus is, and how powerful Jesus is. And then do the training. When we share, at the end of sharing, we ask if anybody wants to accept Christ, you can just say this prayer with me. So we do the praying. We're not forcing them. Some people just saying just to do it because everybody was doing it. And so I noticed she really pray. She pray out loud. She's not praying, Jesus, forgive me sin. It's not like that. Whatever we said, she repeat exactly what we said. So I was like, yeah, that's interesting. I want to know her. I want to make sure she's really believing Jesus. And so we talked to her. We got her address. Know that she's from another village. And then we went back the next week to follow up with her. And then we prayed with her again, prayed for her family. The next week, we're going back again. And I did not go, but our group go, and found out that she is a Christian. She accepted Christ that day when we give out the water filter, when she prayed with us, she accepted Christ. And so then, start from there, we started doing Bible study with her, discipleship with her. That's her husband. Her husband did not believe yet. And so our team going back and forth to her house and sharing gospel some more. And then her husband accepted Christ. And so in Cambodia, they have these altars, made from plastic or wood or stick or something like that, make a huge spirit altar where they can burn incense, where they can worship every night, every day, whenever they feel like it, or whenever they got scared, they will worship the spirit. And so she got that huge thing in her house, and we did not force them to do it. Every time people will believe in Jesus, they will know the truth, and they will realize that those things is just a waste and a trash. So they throw them away. We was thinking, oh, they probably will throw it away later on. So the next week we go back, they said, oh, we throw it away. And I was like, how you throw it away? Well, and then she said, well, I just throw it into the trash. But then my husband told me, why would we do that? Why don't we burn it? So they burn the thing instead of throwing it to the trash. So that shows you how committed they are, how they know that that thing doesn't do a thing to them. It's only God that has the power to do everything for them. So, and now we're doing Bible study with them, discipleship with them, praying that start from her next door neighbor will become a Christian, and we are reaching out to their, her reaching out to her neighbors and start sharing a lot. And a lot of people hate her now because of she's a Christian. Before, you know, oh, buddy, buddy, now, oh, no, I hate you, because you believe in Jesus. And so, yeah. And so we really encouraged by her, her story and her faith in God. That's the story. I don't know what else to say here. Now I'm running out of words. Yeah, I tell you.
I don't think he's ever run out of words. I really don't think it's happened. I guess maybe for the last few minutes, because we do have to get an airplane in a little bit. Does anybody have any questions they want to ask? Or, Craig, is there something you want us to share? Have questions? Because, I mean, what do y'all want to know? Yep.
How did you finally get rid of the rat?
Moved.
Now we had dots that would come over the ceiling, and we had these rat traps in the middle of the night. You hear this bam, and off that one. We moved.
Tell them what the government is with you guys.
How the government is with us. So we, Cambodia is an open country. We aren't free to share. We just have to make sure we get, we are getting permission from the village chief. So we don't just go into a village and just start sharing. We go.
We need to have a contact, we call it a person of peace that we need to find. And like I mentioned in the second, the third village we went to, our person of peace was a witch doctor. Who welcomed us to his house to do Bible stories in front of his house. So there's going to be different people, but we just have to get more permission from the village chief. We have put ourselves under New Life Church, which is one of the denominations, I don't say denominations, but one of the churches that is a good, legitimate church. Domson's dad went to Bible school with the pastor there, so we've known them for a really long time, and they trust us. So we've put ourselves under them just for protection from the government. So we are open and free to be able to share. The only hard part is with me, is with visas. It's very hard for me to get visas to stay there long term. We're constantly going to Thailand every month or every 2 months, I guess. We have to go out. Now, Bohau has a Cambodian visa. Cambodian visa, no visa. Can't get one. It's very difficult. I'm not the only one that struggles with it. A lot of foreigners do too. Any other questions? You can really ask us anything you want. So persecution will come from other, like Domson was talking about, within villages. So it's more family persecution, friends persecution, being ostracized, by society. Not really beating. The government. If anybody is going to persecute you, they're just actually looking from the government. They're looking for money. It's very, very corrupt there. Everything you touch, everything you do, is done through corruption. From the car that we used to drive, but it died, so we don't really drive it now. To the road you walk on, something has been touched by corruption there on the way. So.
Now, in the village that we're working in, it's very hard to find water. So any water that is there, we try to try a way to do it. Now, David had come over to try to do a test, a pre-water filter in that area. With the bad water, like the water that has a very thick particle or mud particle or something like that, right? So we tried a different way, and he found a way to do it. It just take a little longer, but if you can implement that to help the water during the dry season, is very important. But during the rainy season, we have plenty of water. The rainy season is like what? Like, was it 9 or 6 months or... 6 months of rainy season. Now the people there, they kind of smart, but they kind of lazy. They have a way to collect water, but they choose not to do it because it costs money, costs time, costs people to do it. So a lot of things that they kind of make them don't want to do it. They can set up a water collection that we try to set up on our center while Craig was there and David was there. So we do that. You can collect water, enough water to supply you for a whole year, or at least to last you during the dry season. Now, when the dry season hits, it could be worse. It's terrible. Well water will run out, and that's when it comes to pre-water filter. You would say that's very important also. So if we could get that working correctly and working well, we can implement that and can use that. And so right now we just go with the the water filter as an alternative way that It's faster and it's just easier to use it. Now that thing's not going to filter those muddy water. It's going to be hard to filter that muddy water. And a lot of people go without clean water, drinking water like that during the hot season, dry season. And everybody come to the clinic and ask for ibuprofen or they call a miracle pill, which they never heard of ibuprofen before. Now we start to have in Cambodia, but our team brought ibuprofen from the United States, and it works great. Everybody have no more back pain from working in the field. And they's like, can I have those miracle pill? It's like, no, it's ibuprofen from America. You don't call it a miracle pill. Well, it is kind of a miracle when God created everything. But anyway, it's and headache. A lot of people got headache from lacking of water to drink. They drink less water during the hot season. But yeah, water filter, pre-water filter is working side by side in a different time of the year.
So I think, too, what you're going to ask about or what you're talking about is like the ministry aspect of it, too. So we started doing water filters with a 9-year-old girl. Long story short, she had a heart for water, a little girl that goes to our church in North Carolina. And she came to Cambodia a little over a year ago to be able to see what had happened and everything. But it all started with her and her heart. And so she collected enough money to purchase 125 water filters. But you got to wait a minute. And so we started with that. And so once word gets out, everybody wants a water filter. And so really, like, to be able to have the opportunity to share is hard. But when you've got people coming to you, that gives you opportunities to share the gospel and to be able to follow up. So water filters is that bridge that we needed. Medicine, partnered with medicine, our medical outreach, gives you, you've got people coming to you instead of you having to go to people. And that's really, it helps, makes it easier. Because if you're going to them to share the gospel, it can be much more difficult because they're going to change the subject and they're going to talk about something else. But if they've come to you, they're going to be more open to listening. So because word spread, people kept asking us for water filters and more water filters. And so that was where Kids Cross Cultures was able to help us in providing water filters. And that actually is how we even got to Gek and her family. That's how we've been able to start in other villages is through water filters because when people come, I mean, we're going to tell them about how to use the water filter and why they need clean water and the effects of, you know, drinking dirty water. You know, that's all very important, but they're going to hear the gospel. They're not going to leave without hearing the gospel because that's the point, right? That, you mean, you can have clean water the rest of your life and die and go to hell still, right? I mean, we all know that. It's logical, but so we want them to know the truth, like the living water, the water that they won't be thirsty anymore. And so, so that the water filters give us that bridge that we need to be to open doors, to find out those who are truly interested, to find that person of peace in the village. And that's what's been giving us the opportunity to go into other villages and to spread. Because we had been in these four villages for those four villages for about 4 years at the time and had not really even thought about going anywhere else. Like you drive through these villages and you think, man, all these people, no one's even trying to reach them. Like, no one's even making an effort. And so water filters gave us that opportunity to go out farther. I don't think we go much farther because you can't get there and back in a day. Somebody else has got to come the other way, maybe. So does that kind of answer it? Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's been a huge bridge. Yes. And then what was the second part? So for our family, I mean, our big thing right now is with Bohal. Things have definitely changed for us. We were there full-time, but right now because of his epilepsy and just what we've been going through, we're not able to be there full-time. We're here some, and then we'll be We are in North Carolina some, and then we'll be in the U.S. Cambodia some. So I think number one for him is finding medicine that will stop seizures. Because when he has seizures, they really affect him. They cause him to go backwards. It's really hard to explain. This morning I was saying how he looks a little tipsy. As he walked up, I saw him go. I don't know if you saw it or not, but just not that he's going to fall over. I mean, he might fall, but I mean, he's only like this far from the ground, so, but he stumbles, you know, so I, just those things I can say, yeah, he's definitely having seizures, and we're not seeing it. We're not catching it. I'm not able to catch it. So just that we can find medicine that will stop the seizures, because when we stop the seizures, he does so much better. I mean, it's like night and day, and you can see the recovery. We meet with his doctor on Tuesday, so Justin Wisdom. I think, too, along with that, the side effects of medicine can be really bad. And so far, I mean, every time we take a new medicine, she says, okay, here's the side effects. Let me know if you see this. And the only, he was on high dosages of prednisone, and he blew up very quickly. If you saw him, actually, when y'all were there, he was like a balloon. I mean, he was like the Michelin man. Is that the Michelin man? The Michelin man. I've been gone for a while. I mean, he just was chubby, and he did not even look the same. If you saw a picture from, like, May to even now, he just looks so different because he still, you know, had gained weight. So, and of course, the prednisone didn't work. So he's coming off of that, and he's coming off another medicine that he's addicted to that he doesn't know he's addicted to because, you know, I control it. Everything is funny. Is it funny? So just for getting him straightened out, we know that this is going to be going on for the next couple of years. This is a new thing for his doctor. His doctor has never had a patient like him before. She had to go and do research and find out what needs to happen for his type of epilepsy. David needs to go on the airplane with us to take us back. So and then I think for our ministry, we do have a great staff. We have 8 staff that work for us. And we have 4 full-time and 4 full-time and 4 part-time staff. And our part-time staff is actually working full-time right now. And so we need to raise those funds for them, so that they can work full-time. And then just for their endurance, we are getting ready to go into the hottest time of year. When we left, it was 93. And that's normal. And so that's the beginning of hot season. Next month, let's see, February will be 93, 95, 97. March, April, May will be 100 to 110 every day. It's hot. And so just endurance during that time, it's always very, very hard for everyone. One of our staff is pregnant. Her and her husband, they both work for us. They're pregnant. And so that's also cut us back in our, you know, amount of people that go out to the village. So just endurance during this time, encouragement for them. And then I think, too, just because we have kind of transitioned into this discipleship mindset, the great thing is that our team is all on board. Like, they get it. And sometimes that's the hardest part, is getting those who are following you, or, you know, as we lead, getting them to get it. And so they do get it, which is a huge step. So just as they find those people that these new believers that will really understand, and that those believers will go and share with their friends. So it's not just us going and sharing one and sharing one and sharing one, but that we're sharing one and they're sharing two, and then those people are sharing four, so that it's multiplying. And so, yeah, just if that kind of makes sense, those are kind of the things that we really need prayer for. I mean, the goal one day would be that they no longer need us in Cambodia and we're out of there. You know, that's the goal. But this is, you know, just really praying for them during this very difficult time in the next couple of months. Anybody else?
I'm going to jump in because I know you got a flight. So anybody else have a question real quick? Last. So grateful that you guys are here and that you made the time to come see us, get to know us. These are my peeps. And, you know, just as much as I love having you guys come to China and now Cambodia, places I go, I love when people get to come here and meet you. And it's just a real wonderful picture of God's family, God's community, putting us together.